But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to the Wealth Show podcast. Today we are joined by the FCA's Nick Hume, who leads the Department for Advisors, Wealth and Pensions in the Consumer Investments Directorate at the FCA. In the last episode, we discussed how the regulator was preparing for growth and its findings in engaging with wealth firms. In the second part of our discussion, we put together some questions sent in directly from you, our listeners, which Nick has kindly agreed to answer. So getting straight into it, will there be more regulations and reviews into platforms and providers to improve consumer outcomes? Connected to this, how is the FCA monitoring provider service, including transfer times?
Sure. No problem. So look, I mean, nothing specific, I think, is the headline answer to that. Clearly, the consumer duty is a higher bar for everyone, including platforms and product providers. Clearly, there will be things that impact the sector. So targeted support should hopefully create a revolution in the D2C market. CCI, Consumer Composite Investment Regulation, that again will have an impact in terms of product information disclosure and things like that to ensure better, you know, more engaging product disclosure for clients. But to your question about, you know, I can reassure you that although it's done out of a sister department to my own, you know, there is constant proactive monitoring of service delivery of platforms, and we take assertive action where needed, just like we do in the department that I lead, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going on to the next question, this is one we actually had quite a few times. And it was, what should advisors and wealth managers do when they see that something is going wrong? And what do you say to criticism from whistleblowers who feel like they are ignored until something goes truly wrong?
Sure. I love that question. We get that a lot. And another benefit of us going out and about on the road at these round tables and just popping up at events like this is people feel very comfortable coming to us and saying, look, what about this? What about that? Look, in terms of that, there are numerous routes. There is the anonymous route. whistle@fca.org.uk. There is a dedicated team within the FCA that reviews everything. So rest assured that any whistleblower intelligence that comes in is reviewed, is risk rated. And, you know, for example, I will see all of those that come through from my department, which obviously covers financial advice and wealth management. So yes, please be vigilant. You are the eyes and ears of the industry just as much as we are. And we want to work together on that. So please think through the routes you have. There's, you can approach us in numerous different ways, either in person. My email address is plastered all over the internet for a start, which is, some say brave, I think actually quite helpful. In terms of that second question, it's hard, isn't it? Because, you know, if for example, you're going down the whistleblower route, anonymity is key. So we can't sort of share to the world, the elements of an allegation or otherwise that may impact that anonymity. And equally, we have something called Section 348 of FSMA that prevents us from talking about actions that we take with firms that are sensitive. So I do understand the frustration, but rest assured that we do look at it. We do look on a risk basis as to how we, what we do with the intelligence. We act on that intelligence, and we're certainly looking at additional ways that we can give whistleblowers more assurance individually that what they're sharing with us is very much getting acted on. But I, from a personal perspective, whistleblower intelligence is extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another question that we had quite often, and it was about challenging clients. Mm-hmm. So in this specific case, it was, should advisors and wealth managers challenge clients more on discussing retirement living options? As many tend to avoid the conversation and thus don't model the various options available. I suppose, though, the question can be widened to challenging clients more generally.
100%. Yes. I mean, I think that's where the, if you before we get into that specific example, that I think is where the value of advice really comes through. You know, look at the lead up, the hyper speculation in the run up to the budget back end of last year around things like the lifetime allowance and the impact that that may have. And, you know, that is where the value of advice of an advisor comes through. It's super powerful, that ability to challenge with the consumer duty obligations sat upon each individual to say, if I let them do that, is that really going to be in the best interests of them? And so it's right to challenge as I imagine they would expect you should do. To the specific example, yes, absolutely, firms should consider both current and future living needs and model that accordingly using scenarios and options based on the cash flow modeling or the withdrawal guidance rate that you use as a firm, and that's tailored to the specific circumstances of the individual. But yes, even if a client doesn't want to talk about something, you know, it's relevant. Investing is for the long term, it's for the future. So you can't just focus on the needs of the present. You need to think about the needs in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then diving into specific regulations in more detail, what are the key challenges the FCA faces in defining the boundary between financial advice and guidance?
Sure. You know, this is an age-old question. This has been going on for probably longer than both you and I have been born. I don't know. It's been going on for a long time. 8%, as I said earlier, 8% is of the country take advice. What about the rest of the 92%? You know, investment rates back 60, 70 years ago were much, much higher than they are today. And lower than other countries. We see things, you know, I remember Barclays came out 6 months ago and said, you know, there's 400 odd billion pounds of investable cash that's just sitting there. So almost the biggest challenge is making sure that the strong push behind advice, guidance, boundary review continues and lands and continues to have that cross government, cross regulatory family, cross industry support to get it right, to unlock these additional stepping stones to holistic advice that targeted support can provide. For example, there'll be more information coming out in June. Mm-hmm. So we will issue a CP with rules for both pensions and retail investments in June.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and sticking to the advice theme, will there be further steps and ongoing advice?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, we've obviously engaged with the industry earlier this year. We set out our review. We set out what good practice looked like. Overall, we found that in the majority of cases, the ongoing advice services were being delivered as per the contract or per our rules. Is that the 83%, the 15%, and then the 2% that weren't. I think there will definitely need to be advice firms looking at the good practice that's been issued, certainly around things about benchmarking yourself to, did you evidence delivery to the contract and to the rules? And if there are issues, how are you going to proactively go out and mitigate that with clients? You know, we will talk about ongoing advice through the roundtables. We're going to do our own rules review on this because, you know, they've been in place now for more than 10 years. It's right that we have another look to see whether they need to be up to date. And as I said, I don't think this is an issue that necessarily will fade away. It's intrinsic. It's integral to business models. 80% of financial advice firms' revenues comes from ongoing advice. That's up from 60% a few years back. 90% of new clients are put into such arrangements. So, you know, it's just a part of the market. And so I imagine there'll be a continual debate. But come to the roundtables. We will absolutely be talking about ongoing advice and some practical examples about recording, about how to ensure clear communication on recommendations, and how to ensure things like attitude to risk, capacity for loss, client objectives are kept up to date.
Perhaps it would be useful, Nick, if we spoke a bit about what firms can look out for, how they can interact with you, and what's coming up.
Sure. Well, lots of things, but I think the key thing for me to leave listeners with are these roundtables. You know, we've been doing a lot on the wealth management space over the last 2-3 months in particular, trying to get around as many of the sector as possible. So we've been to Stoke, we've been to Bristol, we've been to Edinburgh, we've been in London, really positive events. Delegates seem to really like the fact that we're pairing, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, local supervisors knowledgeable about financial advice and wealth management to practitioners, and then anchoring the debate and the discussion on the day around local issues, not top of the shop FCA priorities and stuff that may or may not be relevant. But looking ahead, we're looking to expand that, particularly on the financial advice side. There will be more on the wealth side if you've missed those. But on the financial advice side, we are in every home nation, starting in Scotland. We're off to Northern Ireland in June, and then we are in various parts of England and Wales throughout the back end of the year. It's a big investment, but we get your feedback. We know how much it matters being able to get into the day-to-day, the tangible, the practical hints and tips. And that's what you tell us is the most valuable thing to help you help your clients. And ultimately, that's what we're after as well. So please, if you haven't already gone back on the email that you will have all been sent, either from a wealth space or a financial advice space, please get in contact. We will absolutely ensure that you get invited.
Okay, so for the final question, is the MPS review. And I appreciate that this is in its early stages. So I'm intrigued to hear what you have to say. But there was some interest in what the review of MPS providers and how they meet consumer duty, what that might look like.
Sure. So you're absolutely right. I can't be particularly concrete on that. Look, it will broadly cover principally asset managers who create, manage and distribute MPS, model portfolio services. You know, it may include a number of things, which I guess are fairly common sense and obvious in terms of the you know, portfolio construction, remodeling, risk ratings disclosure, governance, conflicts of interest, that sort of thing. But it's too early to be concrete in exactly which firms and what on that particular review.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you for joining me in the studio today, Nick. It's been great to talk to you.
Likewise.
And join us next week for another episode. Thank you.
But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crown queen waves from the Belfast.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929. The Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.